You've been doing this show for quite some time now, but it came to you when your father gave you the Joni's Greatest Hits album when you were very young?
Yeah, when I was 13 or 14, my dad, I'd already been listening to a lot of folk music and Simon and Garfunkel, Peter, Paul, Mary. I was really getting into folk music then. And my dad came to my room and he said, "Rainey, I think you're ready for this," and gave me the Greatest Hits. And then a few weeks later gave me Caught in a Spark, because by that point I'd listened to it about 1,000 times and was begging for more. And that was really the moment that started my love affair with Joni Mitchell, which was 20 years ago now, that I first discovered her and then subsequently learnt a big portion of her catalogue, and my dad got me a dulcimer. So yeah, it all kind of started then.
What did he mean by "you're ready for it now"? Was you listening to other things, or was he trying to introduce you to this kind of music previously?
My dad has amazing music taste, thankfully. He had drawers and drawers full of CDs with a lot of jazz music that I was already interested in. And I think at that point, I had maybe written a song or two. And my sort of deepening reverence for songwriting and the arts was really starting to happen. And he could feel that from me. I mean, I'll have to ask my dad, but I think that was sort of along the lines of what was happening.
Now, he gave you a dulcimer. Had you been playing guitar already or piano?
I'd played a little bit of piano growing up, but had kind of dropped off. And then around that age, my early teens, I picked up the guitar. My brother's also a professional musician, and he's 4 years older than me, and he was already playing guitar and bass and everything. And of course, I wanted to be cool like my brother. And so I'd been playing a bit of guitar and learning some Beatles songs. I was really heavily into the Beatles already. Yeah, and then I started playing with all of Joni's open tunings, which opened up a whole new world for me. It was just an exciting sonic experience that I think creates a gateway to freedom in songwriting and creating that really resonated with me.
The open tunings is, of course, one of her trademarks in the way that she sings and plays the guitar. How was it for you to adapt to that and learn that? Because that's not how most people learn how to play the guitar.
Right. It's great. It's a whole other world. I mean, Joni Mitchell is, of course, a quite accomplished painter and artist in her own right as well. And she talks a bit about those tunings being like a whole new palette of colors to paint with, and about how she would often tune to her environment, whether that was sort of the outer environment, nature, or the sounds of the birds and the trees or whatever, or her inner environment, so like her emotional environment. I think I read her say that, I'm paraphrasing, but saying that in an interview somewhere. And that's something I talk about in my show a little bit as well, because she was just so hyper-creative. I mean, prolific and hyper-creative in all senses of the word. And I loved it. And, you know, there's great resources online for learning her songs and the tunings, and I just started to have a lot of fun with it.
Now, what distinguishes your performance from some of the other Joni Mitchell tributes that are out there is they're singing songs, but you are actually diving deeply into Joni and portraying Joni. Given your acting background, it's very unique. What gave you the idea that that should be the path that you take for doing this?
I wanted to write a show for myself that could be a showcase for my acting as well as my music and instrument playing, and thought that that would be an interesting vehicle. And my dad was always very encouraging, and my mum, who is an actress, her parents were both actors and writers as well. So I have that sort of theater lineage that I really love. I love the theater. I grew up loving Shakespeare and going to see my mum in shows, and wanted to find a way to bring all of those passions together in one thing. And I think my parents instilled in me, if you're going to do something, do it 100%. And I just thought I would dive in and take on the greatest challenge of all time, which is, I mean, portraying Joni Mitchell is a serious undertaking, but I take it very seriously. I study really hard. You know, I spent a long time reading and watching everything I could possibly get my hands on. And I still do that because I want to keep my performance fresh and interesting for me and for audiences. Yeah, I kind of just went for it. That was my.
What was the biggest challenge for you in shaping the narrative and making the decisions on the songs? Because there's a huge catalog, as we all know,
Yeah.
and it's very varied in its tone and styles as she has evolved over time as a creative artist. Where did you start and where did you end up, and was it where you wanted to end up?
Yeah, there's a lot of options, and actually in the first few years of doing my show, I had a few different iterations. I explored some of her later jazz work with a band. The iteration that is sort of been consistent since I first wrote the show, and the premise is that it's 1976, and to me, sort of her most autobiographical period, which is 67 to 76, more or less. Is most interesting to me, and I think most culturally significant for that time. And a few of the biographies that I read, and like one in particular, I can't remember the name, kind of chronicles that time period in a way that I found interesting, thinking about the themes of love and freedom, which really recurrent in her work, especially in that period, and even to this day. In that album she put out in 2008 called Shine, there's still thematic congruency that crosses across her whole career lyrically, which is around, I want to be loved. She's wanted to be in relationship, but also was very protective of her creative life. And those two opposing forces were often in conflict. And those themes are explored a lot in her songs. If you look at Help Me, you look at A Case of You. A lot of songs are kind of exploring that theme. And so that theme became a through line that I anchored a lot of my choices around. Of course, they have to do the hits too. But luckily, I love the hits. So, you know, of course, Both Sides Now is a really important song to include in there. And California, which the show title is taken from that song, Take Me As I Am, is the title of my show. And I think that theme too is sort of here I am in my sort of all of me, the multidimensionality of me, the creator, the lover. She's not perfect and she's not afraid to admit to that. So that became a theme. And then in 1976, I thought it would be interesting to set the show at the end of this road trip that she was on after the Rolling Thunder review wrapped up with Dylan. She drove across country and had this kind of solo road trip experience where she wrote quite a few songs from Hejira. And I thought that her returning to California, to LA after that trip would be an interesting moment to set the show right before she puts out that record, which is such a seminal record where she reflects on her career actually in that album. And she talks a little in the song Amelia, which I sometimes play in my show. She references Cactus Tree, which is from her first album. And so there is kind of this like bookending that's happening with the music and the theme that I tried to kind of incorporate and have it make sense in this concert experience that you're getting to be a part of as an audience.
Well, I wish I would have known some of this information at the end of that Rolling Thunder tour, because I got a few minutes with her when the Rolling Thunder tour stopped at the jail where Hurricane Carter was being held, and they did a show. And
Wow.
Joni was walking around. Dylan was not. We were told not to bother him. But she was walking around chatting with people, and we just had a brief exchange, finding out how things were on the show, because people were coming in and out of that tour all
Yeah, oh
for the
yeah.
entire thing. And she just happened to be there, and it was on their way to New York. And I think it was right after that that everything shut down, and that's when she went on her cross-country trip. Have you ever had the opportunity to speak with her about any of this?
Not yet. Here's hoping, Ken. Let's put it out there. I would love to meet her. Apparently she's heard of my show, but I still haven't been able to meet her, so I'm still hoping that that'll happen.
Well, she does promote all the tribute shows for her music, including yours, on her website.
That's right.
I checked that out. She's been very generous, I think, to folks to do that, because she seems to be appreciative of that, since she hasn't been performing much herself.
Right, although I did get to see her at the Hollywood Bowl last October, and I basically cried through the whole show.
I don't know if you know this, but I read over the weekend Cameron Crowe has been working on a biography film with her, and they've been meeting pretty regularly for the last couple of years, and I think it's in another year or so the film is supposed to be ready to be shown to the public. So they've been having all these discussions. I'm wondering, what would you be asking her, as Cameron Crowe has been doing?
Oh my gosh, I would be very intimidated. The choices that she made as a woman, especially in that time in the 60s, 70s, 80s, throughout her whole career, which, as you know, is so varied, and she was such a risk taker. I think I would be interested to hear her perspective on some of the choices she made creatively that went against the record label, and how she maintained her sense of integrity as an artist through all of those changes in the decades. And that's interesting to me. I mean, I'm very interested in supporting women, and I run a songwriter collective here in LA that's run by women and supports women predominantly. And so that's a big passion for mine. Although she wouldn't admit to being a feminist, or at least not 40 years ago. I don't know what she'd say now, but she definitely was one, and an absolute icon, in my opinion, in the feminist movement. So maybe something around that, and having to ask about her writing process, and just to sit with her would be incredible. I would probably not know what to say.
Well, as someone who's an actor, I'm sure you can come up with something, because that's part of what your training is, I know.
That's true, yes.
I know that there's a structure to the show, because obviously you have to rehearse and get things straight, but there is flexibility, I'm guessing, in you might want to wander in a different direction based on the audience sense that's coming back to you on the stage, as to maybe changing a song here and there. Is that correct?
Yes. There is a structure, and certain songs that I will always play, because they play key points in the narrative. But I do leave space for choosing some different songs, and sometimes I'll even take a request at the end of the show. And plus, the monologues that I've written are kind of malleable too, like you said, depending on the audience. And there's space for improvisation in what I'm doing when I'm speaking as Joni as well, because it's just me on stage, the audience really is the other character, and I engage quite a lot with the audience in the show. So yeah, it's fun to play with. Every show is different, and the biggest work now, and I've been doing my show for, like you said, a long time, is just to work on being present and discover new moments as I'm speaking them in them, both the monologues and the songs. That's really the most of the work I have to do, because I know the songs and the show so well. It's like, how can I be in this right in this moment, right in this lyric, with this audience in this moment in time? And that is what still makes it so fun and engaging for me.
Now, you spent some time in filming things when you were on Nashville. What did you learn from that experience that's helped you adjust or improve Take Me As I Am?
Working on Nashville was a wonderful experience. I mean, not only did I get to act, but I got to perform and record music and write some music for the show as well. I mean, I learned so much working on a set, doing take after take. Like I said, kind of creating new moments in every take, engaging with the other actors in the scene, and just performing at a higher level, I would say. Getting to perform at the Opry was an amazing experience, and kind of understanding what it's like to perform on a bigger scale like that really helped imbue that kind of star energy that Joni has. I mean, Joni would never rush. She might take 5 minutes to retune her guitar, but there was never any rushing. And that's such a big lesson I've learned from her, in holding the audience's attention. You don't need to fill the space. Of course, she was very funny too and charming, which is something that I bring into the show. But really, that grounded kind of star energy is a big part of the lessons I took from Nashville and, of course, from Joni and studying her live performances as well.
You mentioned performing at the Opry. I was going to ask you, what was it like knowing that you had an experience that many musicians would love to have, but they have to wait if they're lucky enough to be invited? But you were doing that as part of the show. Did it feel different than other stages you stepped on just because of the history that just hangs over the place?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, so many incredible artists have performed on that stage, and it was amazing. I don't get to perform to such big audiences all the time. I've been sort of playing mid-sized venues and smaller venues predominantly. So it was just such a thrill to get to perform in such an historic and huge space. It was really exciting, and getting to do it with my cast members too was a thrill.
Now, what else are you looking at for the future? Because I know doing a touring show like this can take you away for a long time, and then you need to recover from the road, as everyone does. What are things looking like in the future, either recording or maybe making adjustments to this show or looking at something else down the road?
Well, I'll be in Connecticut, and then I'm doing a 4-week run of my show in Soho at the Soho Playhouse, starting on October 9th till November 3rd. So that's my next upcoming stint, which I'm looking forward to. Of course, I've been doing the Edinburgh Fringe as well now for a few years. I love doing the Fringe. And I'm recording my own music and releasing my own music as well as that. And so I like to take, like you said, sort of take breaks. And I don't want to be doing Joni all year long. I like to have like a month here or there where I get to perform the Joni show. So yeah, mostly looking forward to recording new music. And then I've written another show this year with a couple of friends of mine, Maddie Fraser and Jordana Lilly, called 70s Rewind, which is a musical sketch comedy about the Bee Gees in drag trying to join other famous 70s bands after they break up in 1969. So that's the conceit of that show. And that's been a lot of fun. And we have all these sort of the Eagles and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and each Bee Gees brother sort of comes into that scene and sings their song. So that's been a lot of fun. And we'll be taking that on the road again next year as well.
Well, that's certainly a good time frame to use. Songwriters and singer-songwriters, and just how things changed during that era after the 1960s, when music did change significantly until we got to disco.
Right, and that's sort of what the show chronicles. It ends with a big disco number that the medley that I've put together with some of the Bee Gees' best hits. So, yeah, it's really fun. It's always been my obsession, sort of the late 60s into the 70s. It's been an era of music that I've always loved and still mostly listen to music from that time. It's so rich. And I love the songwriters. I'm just absolutely love the songs that came out of that time.